The following Burl Report podcast is made possible through support from Biotech 2012, Innovating in the New Austerity, Burl & Company's 26th annual report on the life sciences industry, available now by clicking the ad on this page or going to burlandco.com.
I'm Daniel Levine, and this is the Burl Report.
Rapamycin, an immunosuppressant used to treat transplant and cancer patients, has gotten the attention of AIDS researchers who believe the already approved drug may have new uses to combat diseases of aging. We spoke to Brian Kennedy, president and CEO of the Buck Institute for AIDS Research, about our changing understanding of aging, ways we're learning to slow the aging process, and why rapamycin or related compounds may provide a new means of extending life.
Brian, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So in April, the Buck Institute opened a new $37 million regenerative medicine facility. What's the range of research expected to be conducted at that facility?
Well, we really have two goals with the new facility. One is to continue to exploit stem cell and regenerative medicine technologies to try to develop therapies for chronic diseases such as Parkinson's disease, cardiovascular diseases. But I think a second goal that really aligns well with our overall interest at the Buck is to begin to address what it is about adult stem cells that are contributing to the aging process. So many people have heard of embryonic stem cells, but your body is full of adult stem cells as well in each tissue, and those cells become activated and replenish damaged tissue. Their ability to do that with age declines, and so we're interested in why that happens and to what extent that is driving the aging process itself.
So when you talk about regenerative medicine, there I think are implications about aging contained in that notion. How has science changed its view of aging, and how plastic is lifespan and the aging process?
Well, I think that's really where the invertebrate models have been so important. There was a lot of debate two or three decades ago about whether aging could be changed, and we now know that there are hundreds of genes in yeast and in worms and in flies that when you alter their activity, you can slow or accelerate aging. So it turns out the process is very plastic, at least in those species. And what we've been learning over the last 5 to 10 years is that process is also plastic in mammals. So the most exciting finding that I think has happened in the last few years is that there's now a drug, a clinically approved drug, by the way, that you can give to mice in late middle age, and it extends their lifespan by 15%. But it doesn't just extend their lifespan. It extends their health span, the period of time that they're disease-free. And so you're delaying the onset of a whole range of different chronic diseases at the same time with one drug. So
that's, we're talking about rapamycin here?
Rapamycin. And this to me is, we're looking into whether rapamycin might be feasible to give to humans in this context, and a lot of other groups are as well. But I think what we can say now is that this is proof in principle that this you can actually slow aging.
So I want to return to rapamycin, but before we go there, what do we know about aging today in terms of genetics versus environment versus lifestyle? Do we have any clear sense of how responsible each of those things are?
I think the answer is yes. Environment and genetics both play a big role, and of course lifestyle is part of it, the environment. And for most of us, environment is probably a major player. It's interesting, there's this rare population of centenarians that seem to have won the genetic lottery, and more or less, despite what they do, they live long, healthy lives, and they're interesting to talk about. My grandmother is actually one of them, so I have a personal interest. But for the rest of us, which is the vast majority of the population, environment plays a huge role. And it's things like exercise, eating right, managing your stress levels. all those things that your mother told you about turn out to be important. And of course, it's a lot more nuanced than most people's mother was able to tell them, but that's the idea.
So is it reasonable to think of aging as a disease?
Yeah, I tend to think of it that way. But I think that that also leads to a lot of semantic arguments. I think what we can say for sure is that aging is the biggest risk factor for almost all the chronic diseases we care about. And in my mind, it's one cause of these diseases. It's enabling these diseases to happen. And if you have one common cause for all these different chronic diseases, then I think we need to focus on that, because if we can mitigate that, we can have positive effects on a whole range of diseases at the same time.
Well, let's talk about some recent work at the book. You mentioned rapamycin before. Rapamycin is an immunosuppressant used in transplant patients to prevent a rejection of an organ, but it's also been shown, as you mentioned, to extend lifespans in mice.
Yeah.
What do we know about the way rapamycin works and what it's actually doing?
We're still learning that. I'd also point out that it's used in kinds of cancer treatment. It's used in stents after angioplasty to prevent restenosis of arteries. And it looks very promising in animal models of cardiovascular disease and neurodegenerative disease. So if you think about what an aging drug might do, it should have benefits across a range of these chronic diseases, and it looks like rapamycin does. The mechanisms of action are still in question. And whether it's a candidate or derivatives of rapamycin or candidates to actually give to people to extend their health span is still a wide open question. I certainly don't encourage people to take that.
Well, I think of an immunosuppressant as muting the inflammation response in the body. Is that something at play here?
And that's one of the things it probably does. We're finding in some of our cardiovascular studies that one of the benefits of rapamycin may well be through turning down the production of these inflammatory cytokines that accompany aging. I should say that it is used as an immunosuppressant, but only as a combination therapy. So it's used with cyclosporin or other drugs, and it augments their effects. What the findings in mice are proving is that if you take a healthy mouse and give it rapamycin at a low chronic dose, that it actually doesn't suppress the immune system. In fact, in some ways it improves it, because what it does is there are dramatic changes in immune function with aging. The immune system gets worse, and rapamycin seems to delay that process. So, you know, people get scared about the fact that it's an immune suppressant, but I don't think that, my guess is that healthy patients taking a low dose of it wouldn't see those immune suppressive effects, but you might see a suppression of the inflammatory response, which is one of the reasons it might be beneficial for aging.
The buck is actually partnered with Biotica Technology to use rapamycin analogs to treat diseases of aging. Any progress being made in that partnership?
Yeah, we're really excited about that, because they're a great chemistry company. I think that one of the challenges of these drugs like rapamycin, or more generally polyketides, which is the class that rapamycin is in, is that they're not easy to produce. And what Biotica has done is really perfect that process. And then what we're doing is applying our disease assays and aging itself across a range of their compounds. It's worth noting that, you know, of all the drugs people have gotten excited about for aging, two of the biggest ones are rapamycin and resveratrol, and both of those are in that polyketide class. And actually, so are statins, which are, big anti-cardiovascular disease drugs, preventative drugs. So we're excited about probing that, and we think it's going to be possible to find derivatives of rapamycin which give you equal efficacy and reduce side effects. The big side effect that concerns me is the dyslipidemia and hyperglycemia, so diabetic-like phenotypes.
Glucose intolerance,
yeah,
insulin
glucose
resistance.
Intolerance. And that's what we're trying to do, is to separate that side effect from the beneficial effect.
So if you can find an analog, you might be able to get something that does what rapamycin's doing without the
exactly,
the problems.
The good without the bad. Yeah.
So based on everything we know today, how much would you say the aging process can we control or mitigate by doing such things as just exercise or diet?
A lot of it. I mean, clinical obesity is an 8-year reduction in average lifespan. Recent studies have shown that. There's no doubt in my mind that a healthy diet would be beneficial. And, you know, the field has studied dietary restriction for a long time. So if you cut down the calorie intake to levels just above malnutrition, animals live longer, a whole range of different species.
But what fun is it?
Well, but here's my point, is that if for someone like me who's like 6'1", normal body build, you know, the FDA would recommend 2,500 calories a day. But the average American is eating 3,900 calories a day, the average male. So, we can argue about whether it makes sense for me to go down to 1,700 calories a day. But finding a way to sustainably get back down to 2,500 is a first step in the process. And I think everyone can agree that that would make, improve people's health now and as they get older.
So one question I'd like to ask, since I have an aging expert on the phone here. Now that I'm getting older, what does everything hurt?
Oh, that's a tough question. I think, you know, one of the challenges we have is that the field has gotten really good at finding interventions that slow aging. But they're not really good at understanding why those interventions work yet. We're still trying to figure out mechanisms. And if you ask me, what are the causes of aging? If you got 10 of us aging researchers in a room and asked that, you'd probably get 6 different answers. And so it's still a big challenge. There's a lot more basic biology of aging that has to be done. Certainly, you know, as you get older, your inflammatory response changes to stresses, to physiologic stress to the body, and that probably increases pain. You do more wear and tear on joints, and that's a problem if you lose cartilage and things that protect your joints. There's a whole range of different things that probably cause that, but and you're probably slower to heal too. So it's a complicated answer, and it's something that we have to think about a lot harder.
So let me not tie you up anymore and encourage you to get back to work. Brian Kennedy, President and CEO of the Buck Institute for Age Research. Brian, thanks. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, it's been fun anytime.
And a reminder to our listeners that Biotech 2012, Innovating in the New Austerity, Burl & Company's 26th annual report on the life sciences industry, is now available. You can purchase the book or download a free chapter by clicking on the ad on this podcast page or going to burlandco.com. That's burlandco.com. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter at Burl Report.
Thanks for listening. For information on Burl & Company conferences and publications, go to burlandco.com. That's burlandco.com. And be sure to join us at burlreport.com for daily coverage of the life sciences industry. And sign up for our free e-newsletter, the Burl Weekly Brief, by hitting the sign-in link at the top of our website.